Welcome to Wow, I'm a podcaster.
We're so going to use that. That is so this week's outtake.
Man, it sure is. Welcome to episode 443 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And this week, wow, Josh, we're going to be getting right into stuff. We have no feedback. We have no feature. What is going on here?
I don't know. We had all that feedback from last week, and I guess we just wore people out. So no feedback to go over this week. If you would like to send us some for next time, you can shoot us email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com or Twitter, all the other ways that we'll go over at the end of the show. But we'd rather get right into the news. And this first news story is kind of weird. This comes from Paul Thrott over at Thrott.com. He says that Microsoft actually is in talks to join, one might say rejoin, Movies Anywhere. What?
Yeah.
What?
I don't understand this. I don't understand this at all. I heard him say this last week on Windows Weekly, and I was scratching my head. I think I might have uttered something out loud because I just don't understand what they're thinking.
Well, so let's...
Yeah, yeah.
We should recap a little bit on what Movies Anywhere is and why this is such a head-scratching situation for those who might not remember. So Movies Anywhere is essentially the rebranded Disney Movies Anywhere, which is kind of... it's not a direct successor, but it's kind of... the replacement, not directly, but in essence, the replacement for Ultraviolet. It is the digital movie locker online, right? Like, this is the place where most of the studios, not all of them, most of the studios and most of the content marketplaces have joined together to make it so that no matter where you purchase your movies, and almost no matter what movies you purchase, if you purchase them digitally, you can watch all of them in all of the places as long as you link all of the accounts using this Movies Anywhere service. Did I cover the basics of it?
Yeah, I think I would say you could watch most of them in most of the places because it's not a one for one, right? You still have this issue where some services don't have the movies that others do. You have the issue that your movies that you purchase from one studio may not yet transfer over because that studio isn't participating. But for the most part, yes, this kind of federates your movies across all of these different services. Just like Disney Movies Anywhere, I think that's what you were talking about anyway. Disney Movies Anywhere did this specifically for Disney movies, but Movies Anywhere does it for more studios, four or five of the major studios. The holdouts are Paramount and Lionsgate. Those are the two big ones that are not yet playing. And man, I don't know why they're not, because of all of the studios, Paramount and Lionsgate could be accused of doing Ultraviolet better than anyone else. Like, they really get this whole digital locker thing. So why not just sign on with what is the obvious winner here and participate in this? I don't get it. But that's we'll cover that again in just a minute. So here we are back at Disney Movies Anywhere, the successor to this. It was just Disney Movies. And oh, what was one of the services that participated in that Disney Movies Anywhere thing again? What services?
Well, I think we should mention most of them because there's all the big players like iTunes and Amazon and Google Play and Fandango, I think, and even the mediocre player Microsoft was there.
They were there, And about 6 months ago, we reported that they were pulling out.
For no good reason.
Right. We scratched our heads collectively and wondered, well, why would they do that? Because what good is movies and TV otherwise?
Right. Because it's a service that only works on Microsoft stuff. You can buy content from there and you can watch it on Windows 10 devices and the Xbox. And that's it. They don't have apps on Android TV or Android or iOS or Apple TV or Roku or any of those types of places. So the kind of the only thing that movies and TV had going for it was that it at least linked in with all of your Disney movies. And then they killed that.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. So now, supposedly, now they're talking with Movies Anywhere to be a part of it. I don't know. I just have a really hard time buying this. Maybe it aligns with Microsoft's "we don't really know what we're doing in the entertainment space" strategy these days, but this just boggles my mind.
It's March Madness, so everybody's into gambling right now. And if I had to bet, I would bet that this isn't going to happen, because I think it is far more likely that Microsoft is going to kill off this service entirely. And if they're going to do that, then why do this? And part of the reason that I think they're going to kill it off is they killed off the partnership with Disney. And I believe one of the reasons we speculated back then when they killed that partnership was, well, they're kind of getting out of a lot of this stuff. They shut down Groove Music as a service and as a store. Why keep doing this? Like, at least people used Groove Music. I don't know anybody who uses movies and TV to buy content. And I don't think that the rumors of this happening should give anyone an extra ounce of thought that, oh, maybe I should go over to Microsoft to buy my movies. No, don't do that. Yeah. It's not a good idea.
Don't.
Because it's, you have, this is the least reliable possible place to buy video content from right now. But it did make me wonder, and Richard, maybe you know the answer to this. Let's say that Microsoft, their movies and TV app does join Movies Anywhere. If I buy a movie from Microsoft and then it shows up in Movies Anywhere, and then Microsoft kills off their service, will it still show up in the other Movies Anywhere places for me?
Yeah, the way that this is designed, it is supposed to work that way. And that is pretty much what we're seeing kind of in reverse already in Microsoft Store, right? Like, I have all of these Disney movies in my Microsoft library that I otherwise would never have there, just because at one point in time they were associated with Disney Movies Anywhere. So it federates that collection and gives you, you know, whatever it is, a token or a license to that movie in each of these services, regardless of whether they're still associated with each other or not.
Okay, so that would at least be good. And I guess I would like to say one more thing, because, I mean, it sounds like I'm just completely bashing on this and telling people not to use movies and TV at all. If you want to rent content from there, you know, rent a movie, go for it. It's 24 hours. Who cares? But I still wouldn't recommend buying any content from here. There's almost no advantage to it. If you're thinking, well, I'm going to do it because I'm watching on my Xbox, there's a Vudu app on your Xbox. There's an Amazon app on your Xbox. You can use those to watch your Movies Anywhere stuff.
Yep.
So do that.
So, funny story. You know, I was at South By last week, and while I'm away, I still get notifications for purchases from different services. And so I get a PayPal notification.
I know where this is going.
That there was a rental for a movie on the Microsoft Store. Well, it didn't even say that. It just said
what?
It was a PayPal payment for a movie. And I know that I have my Microsoft account set up to PayPal. So I'm like, what on earth? So it turns out that while I'm away, Edward rented a movie from Microsoft. I get home, I'm like, how did you even find that? Like, we have never once rented a movie from the Microsoft store. How did you ever even find it?
Well, and I thought that you were the only one in your house who used the Xbox because you have everything. Like, I thought the Apple TV was the primary device.
I thought so, too.
So where I really thought this story was going is that there was a rental or a purchase of a movie that you already owned. Please tell me you already owned this.
No, we did not already own it. So okay. it was fresh out. So
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, did the experience at least go well? Like did it play fine or were there complaints with that experience too?
Apparently so. Apparently it went fine because I didn't hear about it. I only knew about it because of the notification. I would have heard about it.
Right. Well, that kind of surprisingly is not our only Movies Anywhere story.
No. In fact, the follow-up here is that this week, Fandango now announced that they are going to be, in fact, they already are, now synchronizing with Movies Anywhere. So, you know, you mentioned Fandango Now. Fandango Now has been a part of Ultraviolet, but they have not participated in Movies Anywhere or Disney Movies Anywhere previously. So they're brand new to this. And if you're a Fandango Now user and that's your preferred service, now you'll have... Why do you laugh?
Because before this hit the news, I didn't even remember that Fandango had their own digital movie service.
Oh, come on.
Like you saying if Fandango Now is your preferred service, who does that fit? Like no one. Who is using Fandango Now as their primary online movie service?
Okay, so I know for a fact that MGO users are probably still using Fandango Now because Fandango
are
Now
you just trying
was,
to get into more and more obscure companies?
Was MGO. Okay, anyway, so Fandango Now was an Ultraviolet provider, and they still are, in fact. And one of the things that's so weird about how they support Ultraviolet is that you have your movies in Fandango, and then you have your Ultraviolet library completely separate from your movie library. I don't understand why it is this way, but that's how it is. Oddly enough, that is not how they implemented Movies Anywhere. Movies Anywhere replicates all of your Movies Anywhere movies that they have in your real movies library. So now in Fandango Now, you have your movies library with all of your Movies Anywhere titles, and then your Ultraviolet movies library, actually your Ultraviolet library, which is a combination of movies and TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them sit side by side for some reason. I don't understand why they're separate. I still don't get it. But now they're both there, and that's good. Now, why might you want to use the Fandango Now app? Well, it is available on Windows. It is available on the Xbox. It is available on a whole bunch of other services. It's available on a lot of televisions, actually. So it may be something that you can get to on more devices. Also, frankly, I think they have a slightly better on-screen experience than the craziness that is the Vudu app. Even with the latest versions of the Vudu apps, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, the Vudu experience is still kind of crappy and inconsistent across platforms. So I think Fandango's done a better overall job with the experience. Fandango also does have UHD movies, so if you purchased and received a UHD version of, for example, an Ultraviolet or a Movies Anywhere Redemption, that should show up in there. So, you know, it's a viable alternative. I know you're laughing, but it's a viable alternative.
Well, it is. And the thing to remember is having more and more of these players in the Movies Anywhere ecosystem is only a good thing.
Right.
because it doesn't matter where you buy your stuff, you can watch it anywhere. And it means that, you know, maybe Fandango has a movie on sale and the other guys don't. So you can buy it cheaper over there and still watch it anywhere.
Right. And that's an interesting point, because you may remember, and this is why many of us signed up for Fandango when they became an Ultraviolet partner, Fandango Now was giving away free movies every once in a while. And so I have four different free movies that I got from Fandango Now that appear in my Ultraviolet library. Sadly, I'm really, really dismayed to report this, but Sharknado is not replicating to my iTunes library. That was one of the free titles that I got from Fandango Now, and it still is not in my iTunes library. I don't understand what's going on there.
That's so unfortunate.
You know, Josh, the other thing that this makes me wonder, though, is like, why is Ultraviolet still around? If you go into Vudu, now you have the little Movies Anywhere logo next to some titles. Then you have the Ultraviolet logo next to other titles. Some titles have both of the... Why don't we just... Why don't they give up and admit that it sucked and they lost? Because all of their retailers have pulled out, except for Vudu, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Fandango Now.
Right.
I don't get it.
I don't know either. All ego. Right.
Well, yeah, I think exactly. The ego of the industry. All right. So, hey, that's a good title. Let's remember that. So, one more story specifically about Vudu, and that's that Vudu has updated their apps. And I mentioned just a minute ago that they have some updated versions. They're a little bit easier to use. They're a little bit nicer. They're a little bit more contemporary. And now they've rolled that update out to iOS. So iOS users have a brand new app experience. Now, why am I mentioning this? Because why are we talking about iOS? Because one of the things that the Android and iOS app can do is convert discs to digital copies. And the way it does that is you can scan the UPC if you're at your home address, and it can convert it to a digital copy that you can then buy. Now, on the iOS app, that was always kind of janky, because as many non-iOS people like to remind iOS people, whenever you have an app that is trying to purchase digital content, that app provider would have to pay 30% of the digital cost back to Apple. And most providers don't want to do that. That's why it took so long to get an Amazon app. That's why we didn't have a lot of other digital purchase apps in that platform. And the way that Walmart got around it for Vudu was that the only thing they let you do was put the thing in your cart. And then you had to go to the web and log in and actually complete the purchase, which was janky and annoying and kind of stupid. So they basically took the disk-to-digital capability completely out of the iOS app. And now all you do is you go to vudu.com/disk, and all of the capability you need, including geolocation and taking a photograph, is built into the web capability in iOS now, like it is in most mobile devices. And so you can just use the web to do this functionality and then complete the purchase in the same transaction. It's so nice. It's so much easier. I did it twice today.
You know, while you're talking about the disk to digital thing, I don't know if you remember, but last year we got an email from one of our listeners, John, who told us that Vudu actually has a limit on how many disks you can use in this disk to digital I can't say that.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
Disk to digital service per year, that right. It's 100 disks per year.
Yep.
And he and I have been shooting some messages back and forth lately anyway, talking about some other stuff. And last week he sent me one that said, last year I wrote you guys about Vudu's disk to digital only allowing you 100 disk conversions a year. I just passed 1 year and I'm finally allowed to convert more DVDs.
That's kind of stupid, but
it's super dumb.
Yeah. And remember, they don't have all the titles either, right? I was going through the drawer of the things that I had on DVD, trying to figure out, okay, well, what would I want to upgrade to HD and pay that $5 conversion fee for? Because otherwise, I'm not going to do it. I already have a digital copy of my disc right. as a backup on Plex. But if I could upgrade it, then yeah, then it's worth it. So I'll do that. And it took me a couple scans. Like, they didn't have a lot of stuff that I would have hoped that they would. I did get an HD version of The Right Stuff, which I'm really excited about. That's one of my favorite movies. And I got an HD version of The Dark Crystal, which is one of my favorite totally campy movies. And the cool thing about The Dark Crystal was that in iTunes, that automatically got upgraded to 4K.
Nice.
Yep. Yep. So remember that if you end up purchasing movies that are available in iTunes, you know, even if you're not a big Vudu user, if it's available in 4K in iTunes and you can get the HDX version in Vudu as a conversion or as an upgrade from disc to digital, it'll automatically get that 4K conversion in iTunes.
Now, remind me, does that mean that in services like Vudu that also have 4K versions, if iTunes gives you the 4K version, do the other services give you the 4K version too?
So if you had asked me this question when Movies Anywhere first opened, I would have said, yes, of course they do. That only makes sense. No, they don't.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, they don't. They are not giving you a free upgrade if Apple does. However, if you redeem a 4K UHD disc digital copy just through normal Movies Anywhere redemption, and it's available in one of the services as 4K, and you're eligible for a 4K copy, then it may show up on Vudu as 4K, but not in iTunes. And an example of that is iTunes, for some odd reason, and I can't for the life of me figure this out, doesn't yet have 4K Disney movies. But the most recent Marvel film that I purchased, Thor Ragnarok, did show up as 4K on Vudu.
What?
Right. Right. I don't understand. So it's still kind of messy, but it's so much better than it was. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah.
So that's it for video. Actually, all basically about digital copy.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. It's going to be kind of a short show tonight, guys, because we also don't have any audio news, and even our gaming news is pretty light here. Basically, today, the day that we're recording this is Tuesday, March 20th. That's Sea of Thieves Day. And you'll have to excuse the pun or the cliche here, but Microsoft cleared the decks for Sea of Thieves. There is no other gaming news really to talk about on the Xbox side. They are 100% all in on marketing the ever-living crap out of Sea of Thieves, which is good because, I mean, it's Microsoft and they're typically terrible at marketing anything. So this does seem to be working. At lunch today, I had opened up Mixer's website and like every single stream was Sea of Thieves and stuff. So people are excited. Hopefully people are playing it. Hopefully people are liking it. I'm probably not going to get it. Like, I'm definitely not going to buy the game. I'm not even sure that I'm going to sign up for Game Pass because it's just not my kind of game. I played it enough during the beta. So you're probably not really going to hear me talking much more about Sea of Thieves on this show.
I will say from the promo videos, it looks beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It is gorgeous, especially the water. Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful game. It also, you know, one of my coworkers, Joe, the guy that I do story players with, he's got Xbox Game Pass. And of course, Sea of Thieves is also an Xbox Play Anywhere title. So if you have access to it, you can play it on Xbox or Windows PCs. And this game, it doesn't require a crazy powerful gaming computer to play. He was able to play it on a fairly powerful but still laptop, you know, laptop with decent graphics in it, but not anything amazing. At 1080p, 30 frames per second on the medium graphic setting. So that's pretty good. That's pretty darn good. So that's cool. And I guess one more reminder here is that now all of Microsoft's first party games are going to be available day one inside of the Xbox Game Pass. So you pay $10 a month and you've got access to Sea of Thieves today. And in May, when State of Decay 2 comes out, you'll have access to it on day one just by paying $10 for a month-long subscription to Microsoft Game Pass, or Xbox Game Pass, I guess it's called. So that's cool. Another thing that's cool is deals on games and free games. This week's deals with gold, there's some good titles in here. Titanfall 2, one of the best first-person shooters released in the last couple of years. The Ultimate Edition is $6 right now. Like, I've been thinking of renting this game from Redbox or whatever just to play through the single-player campaign, because a lot of people said of all of the first-person shooters last year, Titanfall 2's by far the best single-player campaign. And so I've thought, you know, I can rent this game for a weekend. It would probably cost me more to rent it from Redbox than to just pay $6 to own the game forever. So probably going to pick up Titanfall 2 here. If Star Wars is more your thing, Battlefront 2 is available for $24. And there's been a lot of news about The Division in the news, which that game is now 2 years old. I loved that game when it first came out. They released a lot of DLC for it. I think 3 or 4 major expansions. All of the DLC is available for pretty significant discounts. And the season pass is, I think, down to $16. So a lot of good Division content and a bunch of other stuff too. FIFA and NHL are on sale. Grand Theft Auto's on sale again. So definitely a good week in the deals with gold. If Sea of Thieves isn't your thing, there's plenty of things you can be playing instead. And then a reminder/recap of the games with gold for March 2018. For the rest of the month, Trials of the Blood Dragon. I haven't really said what this game is. The Trials series, these are the physics-based motorcycle dirt bike racing games where you're trying to like get a dirt bike through crazy obstacle courses and stuff. It's that type of game, but it's in a really weird setting. I still haven't played it yet. But these games are fun, so grab that one for free.
It looks kind of anime-y, is it?
I'm not sure. I've only looked at the cover graphics, the screenshots. Yeah. I think so, based on, you know, the fact that it's about a dragon and all that stuff. But yeah, this is still a motorcycle game. And if you're into those motorcycle physics-y sort of games, grab it, because it's free. Also, March 16th through April 15th, Super Hot. This one is really cool. This is a first-person shooter where things only move when you move. So it's basically a puzzle shooter. It's cool. I've downloaded this one. I haven't gotten to play it yet, but everyone that I've talked to like loves this game. So check that one out too. And then on the 360 for the rest of the month, you've got Quantum Conundrum. And of course, that is also backwards compatible and playable on your Xbox One.
Cool. And that is it for gaming. I did go and download all of those because I had not yet. And the Super Hot thing looked pretty cool too. So, you know, someday maybe, you know, you never know.
Yep.
All right. Hey, before we jump into what's going on in our entertainment centers, because that's pretty much it for the news, I wanted to revisit something that you talked about last week. I knew the story was coming up, and I really, really wanted to weigh in on this when you talked about it. Last week, you talked about how Microsoft had announced that they are going to change how you trigger your Cortana-based speakers, plural, giggle. and the idea is that they're going to do away with the need to say hey before you say Cortana, so that you could just say Cortana and that would trigger your speaker. This is a terrible, terrible idea. I don't understand why they're doing this. Right now, we have this awful problem with Amazon speakers where you can't talk about the assistant by her name because all you have to do is say her name and it triggers the devices. And that's stupid. So why they would be getting rid of the utterance that you have to put in front of the name, I just don't understand. Google doesn't do that. You have to say hey or okay before you say Google. With Siri, you have to say hey before you say Siri. That's how you avoid accidentally tripping it off. I just don't get this.
It's about being polite. I mean, I don't say, hey, Richard, because that's kind of rude.
Yeah, really? Really? We don't say that?
No.
Because I think we do say that.
We do. We do.
I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And like I said last week, even with needing to say, hey, before her name, the invoke was still giving me false positives all the time. So it's right. Only going to be worse if you don't have to say hey.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense to me. This is a terrible idea. I know that Microsoft is not listening, but I don't care. I had to rant about this. This was just dumb, 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 and I can't believe they're really going to go through with this. All right. That is it. That is actually it for what we're talking about. So this may be one of our shorter shows. I'm going to talk a little bit about what is going on in our entertainment centers. So a couple of weeks ago, we had a question from a listener who was wondering what was the deal with all the extra playlists that might show up in a Blu-ray disc. And I talked about how, you know, there may be a couple dozen extra playlists to throw you off. And then I bought a disc and went to back it up and found that it had over 400 decoy playlists. Insane.
That's crazy. 400?
400. So it's Lionsgate that's doing this. Thank you, by the way. You're one of the studios that's not making it easy to get your movies propagated across our services through Movies Anywhere, but you are making it very difficult for us to back them up. So I had to do a fair bit of research on this, but what I found is that there are some programs that have logic in them that can figure out what the real playlist is. Now, I took their word for it. I haven't actually sat down to watch the movie to make sure that my backup is in exactly the same sequence as the disc itself. I still have to do that. But a program called DVDFab, which is a similar backup utility, has the ability to identify which is the real one. And so I ran it in the background, or I should say ran it on the side, just so that I could figure that out. I didn't actually use that to back it up because I still like Make MKV. Hey, you know what?
Right.
Makers of Make MKV, this would be a great feature to add to your software.
Right.
And you can get a free 30-day trial of the DVDFab software. So I was using the free trial just to test this out to see if it worked. I don't know if I really want to buy a license just for that capability, but man, if more and more discs are going to be doing this stupid stuff, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be worth your time.
All right. So consuming lots of media over the last 2 weeks because I was traveling and I had a little bit of time on my hands and I also had some catalysts and we'll talk about that in a minute. This Is Us season finale was just this past week, and man, it was a tearjerker. It was great. It was wonderful. It was awesome. They did such a good job. None of it went the way that I expected it would, and I am so happy with the season. I cannot wait to see what they're going to do with next year, and we have every reason to believe that all the characters are still going to be a part of it, despite the fact that we know that one of them isn't alive anymore. And that's not a spoiler, because that's kind of the whole thing about this story. I also have been watching Homeland. I'm not caught up on that, but I'm really enjoying this season. The Flash and Arrow, I am so far behind on, but I watched a couple of episodes of that while I was traveling. I have started Game of Thrones Season 3, because that's what we are going to start recording this week, our third season for the Let's Talk About Thrones podcast that I do. And I am all caught up on Superstore because I crave that show. I love that show. And as soon as it's out, I have to watch those episodes. I love them. I went to watch Archer only to find that is no longer on Netflix. Archer is now on Hulu. There was no notice for this. This wasn't one of the things that they said going away as of some date. Nope, it just disappeared. But it is available on Hulu. So that's the good news. The other good news is that if you use Apple's TV app, that means now you can track where you are in the series automatically, because it will keep up with what you've watched, which is kind of nice. I watched a movie this weekend. I watched The Shape of Water. I don't remember. Did you see that yet, Josh?
I have not seen it.
Damn, that was good.
Really? I mean, yeah. I guess it's supposed to be. It won Film of the Year, right?
It won Best Picture. It won Best Director. But yes, it. Besides that, it was also a really good film. It was very artistic, which you have to expect with him. That's the kind of movie that he makes. It had these homages to kind of different times and different characters. Like this protagonist or antagonist or whatever you would call him or it in the movie is practically ripped right out of Creature of the Black Lagoon. And it's just a really cool story. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I would definitely recommend people rent it if they're not going to buy it. It is worth the 2 hours. It was wonderful. I also keep forgetting, because it's more news-oriented and not something that we typically talk about on this show, that the new season of Last Week Tonight from John Oliver has started on HBO, and I love that series. I love his deep dives into different topics, and not on the most recent episode, but the one before this, he did what I think is a really good deep dive into cryptocurrency, just kind of talking about what all this is and what it means and a little bit about how it works and a lot about why you probably shouldn't, bet your mortgage on it. That's a show that I really enjoy, and Edward and I both try and watch that regularly. Now, I'm also watching Westworld again. This is, count them, how many times?
Ooh, at least three, right?
Yeah, this is my third time through. And I am watching it because HBO at South by Southwest, well, let's just say HBO won South by Southwest. HBO at South by Southwest had the best interactive experiential event I have ever seen or heard of in the history of like interactive theater. It was phenomenal. They basically rented out a ghost town half an hour away from downtown Austin, turned it into Sweetwater, the town from Westworld, and had 140 actors running around all day long with 400 pages of script. Wow. In character at all times, playing out like they were in Westworld. They had a saloon. You were given coins to use as currency to buy food and money. They had people that would just like come up to you and pick a fight with you. Not like a, you know, punch you fight, but just trying to antagonize you and get you involved in the storyline. And the gist of it is you were trying to find out what was going on so that you could then sell the information you were gathering to the sheriff, who would give you coins to go buy food and more drinks. It was so friggin' cool. I spent 3.5 hours in like beating sun in line to get into this thing. And I spent 4 hours in the actual town for the event. They took you in buses. Even when they bust you, they were in character with the people all in white, you know, like the sexy people that are trying to get you all into the feeling of being on Westworld. The whole script in treating you when you were there was like you were going to actual Westworld. It was insane. And if anything, I have to say, now I was already into it, but it worked. I'm totally sucked back in. I can't wait for the new season. I'm watching season 3 again. Oh, and by the way, I bought the soundtrack because I can't get the music out of my head now. So good to have my own copy.
And crazy. Season 2 doesn't come until this fall, right?
Nope. April 22nd.
Oh, I didn't realize it was coming that quickly. Okay.
Yep. We are only 33 days away. Not that I'm counting.
No, obviously.
Now, my last two digital media things, and these are a little bit different than I might normally talk about, are reading things. So I made two subscription changes just today, actually, for both of them. Today, I subscribed to the New York Times because they are having a 50% off sale for their All Access so that you can get the digital and the physical if you want it for 50% off. And I like to support the media because the media is getting beat up. And I feel like we should be supporting the media. The media is good. The media is here for a reason. I also then, kind of to counteract that, decided to crank down my Audible subscription. And I generally don't get to listen to all the books that I get credits for. I spend them with my credits, but I don't end up listening to all of them fast enough. And so like all my other digital media, it's just kind of racking up. And so I figured, okay, well, I'll just cancel my account because you can cancel and then eventually go back. But then you have to link up your account and everything. It's confusing. So I found out today when I went to cancel, which was what I was going to do, that you can basically switch your otherwise $15 a month regular account to a light mode, which costs $10 for the year, and it lets you keep your unused credits until you resume again. So I thought that was pretty cool. So that's what I did, and I figure I'll just kind of put it on hold until I've listened to what I have or there's something new that I have to have, and then I'll turn it back on again. But in case you didn't know about that, I thought, you know, $10 for a year versus $15 a month, if you're racking up credits and not using them, you might want to look into that.
So the idea then is you would take all the tokens or whatever that you have, buy a bunch of books, or maybe not, and still have access to everything that you've purchased previously, but not have to pay monthly for it. And then whenever you're ready to start reading again and accessing new books and stuff like that, then you go back to the $15 a month?
Yeah, if you want to do it that way. Now, it's worth mentioning that you don't lose access to books that you've already purchased, even if you cancel your account. You can still listen to the books that you've already bought. You just don't have, you're just not getting credits if you cancel your account. But I didn't want to lose the credits that I hadn't used. I mean, I've paid basically $15 for each one of the credits. And if you have more than like zero of them, it kind of is worth paying a year for $9 or $10 or whatever it was to just put that on hold and be able to use those credits until you're ready to spend more again. So, you know, if you just want out, you can still listen to everything. You just lose any credits you haven't used.
Right. So I've never actually subscribed to Audible, but now I'm kind of remembering how this works. And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's the way Zune used to work way, way back in the day, where you pay monthly and you get access to just about everything they have, or maybe everything that they have, but then you get credits to purchase whatever and keep that forever, even if you're not a subscriber anymore. Is that the way
Correct.
It works?
Yep.
Okay.
That's Audible. Cool. It's like Zune.
All right. Well, after your lengthy list of stuff, people might be surprised to know I actually have quite a few things to mention too. Let's start with a quick update on my Plex server. One of our biggest pieces of feedback last week was some suggestions for how to make my Plex server and my HD Home Run DVR and all of that stuff work a lot better while and more stable and reliable on my NVIDIA Shield TV box. And I am happy to report it's all working. I have not had a single issue in the last week with my NVIDIA Shield. Every time that I've went to turn on live TV, whether that be through Plex or through the HD Home Run app, it has worked. All of my recordings have worked. It's been nice. Now, it means that I leave my NVIDIA Shield TV on all the time, but what do I care? It uses very little power. It just means having that little green light on, but it's pretty low to the ground. I don't care. It's fine. Then on the gaming side, because I've watched a little bit of college basketball because it's March Madness time, but that's kind of about it in terms of watching stuff. I've been playing some games. I continue to play through Final Fantasy 15, very much enjoying that. Also, Rainbow Six Siege, gosh, that game has been out for, 2.5 years now? I'm not exactly sure. It's a while. They released a new version, or a new mode, I guess I should say, for that, that for some reason that I can't explain or understand is a limited time mode. It's called Outbreak. It's a three-player story kind of campaign where like a meteor or something like that crashed into the earth and now there's all these monsters and stuff and you have to go through these scenarios and kill the monsters and stay alive. It's actually really fun. So check that out if you have Rainbow Six Siege. The other thing is that since it's only three players and it's not online competitive multiplayer, if you've kind of gotten away from Rainbow Six Siege because you're sick of the horribly toxic community that plays that game competitively, well, you only need two friends to make this fun and not have to worry about any other random person being a jerk to you. So there you go. Nice. Another interesting gaming thing that happened this week is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, PUBG for short, released on Android and iOS. And I think a lot of people may have seen that news or maybe just hearing it now and thinking, what? How could that possibly work? Like just playing it on Xbox, you feel like an Xbox controller that has 47 buttons on it or whatever doesn't have enough buttons to play PUBG. How could this possibly work on a phone? It totally works on a phone. I'm not going to go into all the details of how it works, but it does. And there's no reason for me to tell you a bunch about it because you can play it for free. That's the other thing. It's free. It costs you $30 on an Xbox or on a Windows PC. So there's kind of no reason not to try this. It works out really well. And for some reason, I am way better at PUBG on Android than I am on Xbox. I don't know why. I have no idea why, but I'm doing so much better. So I'm going to keep playing that.
That's so weird. I saw you saying that on Twitter and I was like, what is that about? It must have something to do with just how the controls work or whatever. But that's pretty wild. Now, why do you suppose they're making it available for free?
I'm not really sure. There must be ways in the game to buy things. And it does do a lot of the typical mobile game type things where, you know, there are bonuses for logging in every day and doing, you know, certain things every single day. You get little XP bonuses and all this stuff. And like every mobile game, there's like four different versions of currency basically in the game. And I don't understand them all. And all of that is unique to the mobile version. Like most of that crap is not in the Xbox and PC version. The only currency in the mainline versions are these credits that you get from playing through the matches, and you turn them in for crates, and all of the crates have cosmetic items to dress your character up with. And you can spend money, real money, to buy those crates. So I would imagine you can spend real money on crates and stuff like that in the mobile game, but I honestly didn't even see how to do it just yet, but it's got to be there. I think the other reason it's free is just because, like, no one's going to pay $30 for a game on their phone ever. So,
well, right, but you would think they would charge something for it on the phone. I mean, typically you expect that a good high-profile game might cost $10.
Yeah, I think they probably could have gotten away with $5 or $10. I think part of the problem, though, is that Fortnite exists, and they're already having enough trouble with Fortnite on the consoles, because Fortnite Battle Royale is completely free. I mean, you can buy loot boxes and stuff like that, but it's totally free, and it's really, I think, putting a hurtin' on PUBG because of that. I think the Fortnite Battle Royale player base has grown tremendously, and PUBG's got to do something to combat that. And Fortnite also released a version on iOS and Android in the last couple of weeks. So I think they're probably just trying to keep pace. But if it weren't for Fortnite, they absolutely could get away with charging money for this, because it's the whole game experience. Like, there's everything that's in the console game is here. All the vehicles, all the weapons, it's the same map. It's the whole experience. Your heart will get pumping the same way it does when you're playing on your Xbox or your PC. So this is a great way for people to check out what all of this excitement is, and then maybe pick it up on their Xbox or their PC.
Very cool.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. If you're on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/TheDMZ. We've also got some other podcasts for you to listen to. Richard does another show called Home On, where he covers the latest home automation and smart home and home control news. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
So as I had expected, I was going to spend some time with the folks at Yonomi while I was out at South by Southwest in Austin. And I did just that. I sat down with Kent Dixon, one of the co-founders, and talked with him for a little over half an hour. We had a great discussion. I'm putting that into an episode that I expect to release this week. And I don't know if we mentioned this on this show or not, but I'm also really excited that we have a sponsor now for Home On. And our first three episodes with the first sponsor are, you know, currently in play now. This will be the second episode with this sponsor. So I'm really thankful to the community for being supportive of that. And, you know, I want to get feedback and make sure that everybody's cool with it. But I'm really happy with the fit that we got in the sponsor that we have this first time around. And I want to keep to that genre so that it is enjoyable for everybody listening. And cool. Story players, you guys, when I was at South By, I think I saw two things go by on the feed. Well, one on the feed, and then one I think was like a bonus on social media.
Right. Yeah, that the social media one, we threw a little bit of a teaser out on our SoundCloud page. That was a little bit of fun we were having. Yeah, we released an episode last week for Life is Strange Before the Storm Farewell. It's the bonus episode of the Life is Strange Before the Storm series. It was a great way to wrap up that series. And, you know, that's not it. We obviously have these podcasts and we're working on some more, and you should have another full length episode, maybe in about a week. But if you can't wait quite that long, we're doing something a little different come this Friday. That's right. Friday, March 23rd, Joe and I are taking off work and we are going to live stream A Way Out for as long as we possibly can.
What?
That game comes out this Friday. It is a co-op game. The whole game is meant to be played with two people. It is split screen. You can play it online or together on the same couch, which is how we're going to do it. It is the story of a couple of dudes who break out of prison, and then I'm not even really sure what else. You know, it's what do you do when you break out of prison? It's supposed to be a really interesting story. It comes out Friday, so we're just going to try and play it. Now, the problem is it's like a 6 to 8 hour game, and I don't know that we can play an 8 hour game in one sitting. We're kind of old, and that might be difficult. But we're going to try, and we're going to live stream the whole thing on Mixer, so be looking for that come Friday. If you're just trying, maybe you don't work days, because we're going to start fairly early in the morning on, you know, Eastern time, you know, or you just don't want to deal with work, head on over to Mixer, mixer.com/Josh Pollard for sure. Or Joe's account will be doing the whole Mixer co-streaming thing so that you can find it nice and easily. And we'll, of course, tweet links out to all of that too, so that you don't miss that. And then later, we won't be live streaming our actual podcast discussion of it. We don't normally do that, but we'll later record our normal podcast episode of our thoughts of the game and get that out to you guys as soon as possible.
Josh, so, the word you were looking for was sensible, not old.
Right. Yeah, let's go with that. Right. Well, if you like live streaming, then you ought to come back and watch this show live, because we record it most weeks, Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and we usually tweet when that is going to happen. I kind of forgot to tweet about it tonight, sorry. But normally Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, using Mixer, you can find it right here at the Digital Media Zone. There's a chat room so that you can be fully interactive and part of the podcast experience. So hopefully we will see you back for that next week, because that's going to do it for episode 443. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.